Now stay tuned for To Your Health, where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. And by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Now here is your host, MC Blair.
Good morning. Good morning. Hey, this is MC Blair right here. I've got a good show for you. Getting close to the holiday season. And, you know, I got to tell you, this particular, I guess it's a problem. It's the health of the nation is the title of this show, Health of the Nation. And many years ago, many years ago, philosophers have said that any country at war with itself is doomed. That's interesting. That means if you are at war with your own people, you're killing your own people and slaughtering your own people, then you are a doomed nation unless that behavior stops. And we've been doing this to our own nation for over 50 years. 1961, the United Nations Single Convention on Narcotics Drugs was passed or established in order to create a drug-free world. Well, that's really, what's the word? Oh, yeah, insane. There's no drug-free world. So, like, what, no aspirin, no alcohol? No, I mean, yeah. So we have alcohol, which is legal. The worst of the drugs kills more people than any other illegal drug, and all the illegal drugs combined. And so we don't know what the UN was thinking, but then when Richard Nixon said, we are declaring an all-out war on drugs, he later it turned out, we always knew he was a racist, blatantly, used the N-word many times, and he wanted to lock up the hippies and the blacks, period. He wanted to, it's called voter suppression, is actually what it was, to stop the liberals, hippies, and black and brown people from voting because they would never vote for a Republican. And that still holds true today, for the most part. There are a few people that don't get it, but and they vote Republican. The new organization, Count the Costs, decided it was time for an assessment. To this end, they have compiled the comprehensive report. That's what I'm reading from today, and we will be discussing that in detail. And it's the death and destruction of the war on drugs has directly, the death and destruction the war on drugs has caused around the world for the past 50 years. Unfortunately, the saddest effect on the war on drugs is that the centrality of criminalizing users means that in reality, the war on drugs is a war on the people, the drug users. The war on drugs is insanely expensive. In the past 40 years, the United States has spent more than $1 trillion enforcing drug laws. What a waste of time. Annually, the U.S. spends at least $15 billion on drug enforcement. Huh, my goodness gracious, so much more to do or needed for this country than enforcing draconian drug laws. Now, just for a minute, that is definitely the war on drugs is, or the laws against certain drugs is extremely draconian, very similar to prohibition. The Volstead Act, that was really stupid. It was mainly pushed by two groups, the temperance movement, but mainly by the KKK. And the reason they wanted that, and of course many, many, many members of Congress were proud members of the KKK back in those days, and one of the reasons they wanted that prohibition passed was to put the German beer makers out of business. Can you believe it? I mean, I can believe it. That's how the KKK is. Those freaking Germans. Those Germans, you know. And of course, then the blacks and the liberals and the Jewish folks and all that. That's what the KKK was against, was the German or the foreign, them foreigners, you know. Beer makers, they wanted them out of business, so they really pushed it. And so they had many members in Congress that voted for the Volstead Act in order to put the German beer makers out of business. And that's the reason they did that. And then we realized, wait a minute, you can't do that. And Joe Kennedy played a big part in getting Prohibition repealed. And of course, the main result of Prohibition was organized crime. Ah, boy, that did a lot of good for the nation, didn't it? Yeah, let's organize the criminals. And that's what Prohibition produced. That was the only significant thing that Prohibition produced, other than possibly the FBI. And, quote, that was through the Untouchables. But anyway, that's what the Prohibition, the war on alcohol produced. So then, you know, 30 years later, they decided, well, you know, we need another war on something that people want. One of the desires of the human being is to be intoxicated from time to time. And I mean, there are various degrees, obviously. What do they call it? Catch a buzz or get a little happy or whatever. And that's what people enjoy that from time to time, maybe a drink or two at the end of a day or a few beers or whatever it is, whatever floats your boat, they say. And those things should not be illegal. How do you make a desire, a basic human desire, illegal? That is insane. That's absolutely insane and goes against everything that is human. So, yeah, it's a war on humanity, actually, the war on drugs. Over $1 trillion that we've spent. Globally, over $100 billion every year is spent fighting the war on drugs. Now, Singapore does not have a drug problem. There, you can't get an illegal drug in Singapore, and that's because they have draconian measures to go along with their draconian laws. Now, if you're going to have a draconian law, which I do not believe we should, draconian laws are draconian, and we are supposedly not a draconian society. And so you have a draconian law, and the only way to effectively enforce it is to have a draconian measure. Now, what do they do in Singapore? Well, if you use any substance, any amount, the first time, you go to 22 months of, quote, rehab, end quote. And that includes daily canings in public. So for 22 months, you go through this, quote, rehab. And if you sell any amount of any substance that's illegal, first offense, you're killed. Instantly, you're done. There's no trial. They just take you out and shoot you. And guess what? They don't have a drug problem in Singapore. I don't think that's what we want in the United States, those kinds of laws. But they're the only way to totally eradicate the use and selling of illegal drugs is to have those draconian measures, which we don't do that. So let's get rid of the draconian laws. All the money in practice is, in practice, a complete total waste. Every dime we spend on the war on drugs is a total waste. Drug use has expanded steadily since the war on drugs began. The exact opposite outcome the war was meant to affect. There have been nearly no official cost-benefit analysis of the war on drugs, leaving the door wide open for all kinds of unexpected harm caused and little accountability. Sounds like our current administration, little accountability. Well, guess what? What we're experiencing now in the United States government, especially in the White House and the Congress, is no accountability. Nobody cares. What did Mick Mulvaney say? Yeah, we did all that. We did a quid pro quo. We did all of that. Get over it. There you go. No accountability. So there you go. We're a symptom of this. I was listening to a doctor on the radio many, many years ago. I'm talking the 70s. And he described exactly what's going on now in the government that will happen as long as the war on drugs continues. So the wasted money could be spent on programs that actually matter. Governments around the world are enduring brutal austerity measures to balance budgets in the aftermath of 2008. Taxpayer money squandered on drug enforcement is diverted from other social spending measures that actually benefits citizens. You know, it used to be, especially with Eisenhower, he had a 90% marginal tax rate, and so it was over incomes of $1 million. And that built the middle class. He knew that the only way this country would survive would be a strong middle class. And so that money didn't go down back to the people in forms of cash. It went to the people in forms of good schools, good highways, and other related services, which made living a better experience for most people. And so, there you go. That built the middle class, strong middle class, and we've been trying to eradicate it ever since, starting with Reagan and every single administration after that. So, yeah, it's not partisan. I'm not being partisan here. I'm just saying that Nixon started the drug war, which was totally draconian, and ever since then, and especially with Reagan, who was the big push for privatizing the prisons. So now, and we'll get into that, you have all these prisons that are making a ton of money because of the war on drugs. So they're not going to end it. They don't want to end it. Heck no, man, let's keep these prisoners coming. And that's my next subject. Mass imprisonment sacrifices economic productivity. Now think about that for a minute. We talk about how folks in certain neighborhoods grow up without fathers and mothers, mainly fathers, one-income family, one-parent family. We say, that's the big problem today. Well, yeah, it is, and guess why? Guess why we're facing that? We are facing that because they're locked up for a joint or a little sack of weed or, you know, a little sack of cocaine or heroin or whatever. They're locked up for that. And so all of a sudden, they can't work. You take them out of the workforce. And as it says, today the number stands at over 500,000. Okay, 40 years ago, 38,000 people were imprisoned in the United States for drug-related offenses. 38,000. Today it's over 500,000. 13 times the amount over 40 years. The Office of National Drug Control Policies estimates resulting productivity losses around $40 billion a year in the United States. We have lost $40 billion a year by locking up the people that were producing that. Oh, that's smart. Yeah, hey, I'll tell you, let's take this economy and screw it. The U.S. has more people in prison for drug-related crimes than the entire European Union has prisoners. This despite the fact that the population of the U.S. is 40% smaller than the European Union. So that's really askew. Yep, there's too many people making too much money off the war on drugs to end it. There you go. There are so many industries that would go out of business and so many people that would lose their jobs if we stopped the war on drugs, which is a total waste of money. Well, how does that make sense? Tax revenue from regulated drug markets would be a government windfall. In the Netherlands, coffee shops where patrons use drugs deliver more than 300 million euro in tax revenues every year. That's a lot of money. And that's like, what, 1.5 times? So that'd be $450 million in tax revenue every year to the U.S. Harvard economist Jeffrey Miron estimates the U.S. government could garner tens of billions of dollars annually in taxes and decreased costs. Can you imagine that? You imagine how much safer our police force would be? Can you imagine how much safer our cities would be if we didn't have a bunch of drug dealers hanging out? Because if the war on drugs was ended, you would go to this ABC store or wherever liquor was sold, and that's where your drugs would be. And they'd be totally regulated. They would be clean. You would know exactly what you're getting. They wouldn't be full of poison like they are today. We'll get into that more in a bit. The health of the nation is terrible. We're sick. We are sick, 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 sick. Becoming a criminal has never been more profitable. Hey, yeah. Tell you what, kid, you're in school right now. Stay in school, right? Be cool. Stay in school. But you're in school right now, and you're looking at your income opportunities. Well, basic supply and demand says, oh, you should sell drugs. Not only do criminals get paid to take more risk, but completely unregulated playing field allows for insane price markups. The drug report says, how ridiculous can this get? There's 413% markup from farm gate to consumer in the price of a legal drug, coffee. The percentage price markup for an illegal drug, such as heroin, can run into the multiple thousands. Expensive drugs can cause more people to commit crimes in order to fund their habits. When's the last time you saw somebody rob a store so he could get a cup of coffee? Or buy a pint of liquor? Well, that happens from time to time. But, you know, example, cigarette smokers typically don't have to commit felonies just to fund their lifestyles. However, due to insane markups of unsafe, unregulated, and therefore highly addicting products, many users of illegal drugs often do. A comparison of illegal drug users with medicinal users of the same drugs shows a dramatic increase in the level of crime being committed to fund those drug addictions. How about that? The cost to the public health system of unsafe, unregulated drugs are exorbitant. There is simply no way to vouch for the safety of products in a completely unregulated market. There you go. Drugs bought through criminal networks. There's the thing. You know something, folks? I've got a daughter. I've got a son. And I know that when they went to college, they experimented. Don't we all? Doesn't everybody? So the question I have is, if you know that your son or daughter is going to experiment, you counsel them on it and all that, and you hope they don't. But if they are, if you know they are, would you rather have them getting their drugs from an ABC store where they, you know, got a fake an ID or whatever it is, and go into the ABC store and get drugs that, you know, they're clean and, you know, totally regulated? Or do you want them going down to a seedy part of town where there's all sorts of crime and guns and knives and all that sort of thing to get their drug, which may or may not be the drug they want? And it may be laced with all kinds of stuff. So where do you want your kid going if they're going to experiment? To a store that's, well-lit, well-regulated, or to, you know, a drug dealer who probably has a weapon? And, you know, what happens if, the guy gets busted at the time your kid's there? They get swept up into it. Now they're in the system. So you make the choice. Where do you want your kid buying, their, when they experiment, where do you want your kid getting the goods? From a seedy drug dealer with a weapon, or from a store? The cost to public health system of unsafe, unregulated drugs are also exorbitant. And we're going to take a little break here, and when we come back, we're going to keep going. And we're back. This is MC Blair. You're listening to Your Health on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Now, I left this with the cost to the public health system of unsafe, unregulated drugs are exorbitant. There's no way to vouch for the safety of products in a completely unregulated market like that for illegal drugs. Drugs bought through criminal networks are often cut with contaminants. Dealers sell more potent and risky products, and high-risk behaviors such as injecting and needle sharing in unsupervised and unhygienic environments is commonplace. You know, in England, heroin addicts, they go to the clinic, they get their dose of heroin, they go to work. Halfway through the day, they go back to the clinic, get another dose. At the end of the day, they get their last dose, and they go back home. All the needles are clean. All the heroin is regulated. They know exactly what it is. Now, I'm not advocating becoming a heroin addict. Understand that. I think it's ridiculous. But if you're addicted, you should be able to get your drug totally regulated, totally clean from a clinic or, you know, wherever. But that should be the case. It's not the case. The resulting increase in hospital visits and emergency room admissions for infections, overdose, and poisonings, combined with increased treatment requirement for HIV and AIDS, hepatitis, tuberculosis, it can place a substantial additional burden on already squeezed healthcare budgets. That's for illegal drugs. The war on drugs distorts the entire economies when the drug trade is bigger than anything else. Now think about that. That's the biggest trade there is in the world is the drug trade. More money is in that than any other commodity. That's all it is a commodity. It's called Dutch disease. It's when so much drug money flows into the economy that it causes the currency to appreciate, which in turn decreases exports and makes the economy less competitive. Now, many low-income countries where drug cartels thrive are so small to begin with that this can be a serious problem. It has serious implications for policymakers who therefore don't have sufficient data on important economic issues to make informed policy decisions. Now, this is where the really gets bad. The poor farmers, by necessity into growing drug crops, are ruined financially by mass government's destruction of their fields. So you get this poor farmer, and the drug lords come in there and say, if you don't grow opium poppies or marijuana or coca, then we'll kill you and your family. So they're not going anywhere. They don't have the money to just say, well, heck with you, I'm moving to Canada. they have to do it or they die. So they're doing it and they're going along. And then all of a sudden the government says, oh, look at that field over there. And they spray it with Agent Orange or whatever it is they spray it with that kills everything. And now the guy and gal or the farmers not only don't have the minute income that they're paid by the drug lords, they don't even have a product. And their fields won't grow anymore. So they're done. So they die anyway. Gee, that's really cool. You know, I just don't understand it. The total turnover of $330 billion each year is only 1% of all the money made. Yeah, that's right. Only 1% of the money made goes to the farmers. You know? The violent drug trafficking cartels take everything else. When crops of poor farmers are destroyed by aerial government flyovers, many lose everything. The war on drugs deters business investment in war-torn areas. Yeah, about that. Say, the studies have shown that aggregate investment 5% lower in countries identified as being corrupt. In Mexico, for example, that means a $1.6 billion hit to investment due to the business environment fostered by the war on drugs. Companies funded by drug money laundering in some countries can easily force legitimate competitors out of business by underpricing goods and services, thus consolidating entire sectors. You understand that? That if you have a company that's funded by drug money, you know, and money laundering, then you can charge way less for your goods and services and put other legitimate businesses out of business. The war on drugs kills important tourism industries in war-torn areas. You know, Acapulco, man, that used to be the place to go, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, 30s, 40s, 50s, early 60s. Tourism has dropped off by 93% to Acapulco because you got guns in the streets. People are unsafe. They don't want to go there. The violence perpetrated by both criminals and governments to control the illegal drug trade is devastating. Cartels in major trafficking countries actively employ private armies that often has more powerful arsenals than law enforcement. You know, we read the papers where the drug cartels go down there and shoot judges in Mexico, shoot police. You know, it's like, and it's open, and there's nothing they can do about it. Nothing. Insurgent and terrorist groups, talk about the war on terrorism, right? They take advantage of insane profits of the illegal drug trade to raise money which funds the act of mass violence. Yeah, that's smart. Let's give tons of money to criminals and see what happens. Well, look at Congress. The unregulated illegal drug trade cartels use violence as a major tactic to disrupt competitors and increase market share. That's right. You're doing pretty well in the business, you know, in a regular business. And, you know, they'll come in and kill you. There you go. Because guess what? They don't have to follow the rules. So we are competing with people that don't have to follow the rules. You can't compete with that because they'll kill you. The excess profits made from illegal drug trade is more than enough to buy influence and corrupt public officials. Think about that for a second. The excess profits made from illegal drug trade is more than enough to buy influence and corrupt public officials. That's what we have right now, today. The United Nations Office on Drug and Crime describes a situation like this. The magnitude of funds under criminal control poses special threats to governments, particularly in developing countries where the domestic security markets and capital markets are far too small to absorb such funds without quickly becoming dependent on them. It's difficult to have a functioning democratic system when drug cartels have the means to buy protection, political support, or votes at every level of government and society. It is difficult to have a functioning democratic system when they buy votes and they get political support. And that's at every level of government, state government, or local government, state government, and national government. And believe me, if you don't think that drug money is funding our political system at every level, then get your head out of the sand, because that's exactly what's going on. We wonder, how did we get such unqualified people in Congress, in the White House? Well, that's the reason right there. That's the reason. The war on drugs criminalizes poverty and makes criminals of the poor. Now, there you go. You're poor, so you're a criminal. Farmers in regions with undeveloped infrastructure and bargaining systems that enslave the poor to debtors can often only make ends meet by choosing to grow an illegal crop in higher demand than the legal one. So you got a corn farmer, and he's going along, and he's barely making money, hearing this and that and this and that, and this, he loses part of his yield because of weather, or, you know, bad fertilizer, or for whatever reason. But if he grew pot, yeah, he'd make a lot of money. Or if he grew opium, he'd make a lot of money. So he does that. Opium bans and crop radiation programs have been linked with increased poverty among farmers, reduced access to health and education, increased indebtedness, large-scale displacement, accelerated deforestation, and social discontent. It's no surprise, then, that the war on drugs waged by governments often drives large groups of people right into the arms of criminal gangs and insurgent groups. Yeah, that's what we want, you know? So the government should be out of this enforcement business of a substance that there's a demand for. Makes no sense. Makes no sense. It criminalizes poverty and makes criminals of the poor. Whew. Aerial fumigation, a favorite tool of the war on drugs, is destroying the environment. Now, we also know that factory farms destroy the environment as well, so that's one thing that's already going on. Now, in the Colombia's Amazon region, one of the most biologically diverse areas on the planet, government planes are spraying Roundup. Oh, there you go. Indiscriminate herbicide that kills every plant it touches. They do this in an attempt to eradicate drug crops, but they're eradicating the rainforest. And that's what produces over a third of our oxygen. Yeah, we don't need air to breathe. Oh, my goodness gracious. And it's not just plant life that's affected. Millions of people and countless animal species rely on fresh water from those areas where Roundup is sprayed, which kills them all. You understand that, right? Farmers that use Roundup almost invariably 100% get non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. They just awarded $2 billion to one couple from a Monsanto lawsuit. Of course, that'll, you know, go through the courts and all that sort of thing, and it'll be reduced, but they're getting there. And Bayer, the German company who bought Monsanto, who makes Roundup, lost 50% of their value a few days after acquiring Monsanto because of the over 13,000 lawsuits against Monsanto for Roundup. And yet Roundup is still legal to use. Yeah, the government's not going to do anything. Why? Because the large factory farms that are corporately owned have political pull. That's right. And many of them fund drugs. That's right. Private prisons are funded by the war on drugs. There should be no private prisons, period. None. But there's a whole economy that's based on, and how about the rehab business? Man, what a good business to get into as long as the war on drugs stays alive and well. So those people, the big rehab company, they're making millions of dollars, have a vested interest in keeping the war on drugs. So do pharmaceutical industries, by the way. That's the big one. That's a huge drug cartel, in case you didn't know it. And that's a fact. The war on drugs is causing uncontrollable environmental pollution, even aside from aerial fumigation. Unregulated criminal drug producers are not prioritizing proper waste disposal, you think? It cuts into profits. Instead, they dump toxic byproducts in secret, contaminating soil and waterways, and destroying plant and animal life in the process. See, they're not even regulated, obviously. In the U.S., production of 1 kilo of methamphetamine can yield 5 or 6 kilos of toxic waste. Methamphetamine. Now, let me tell you something right now, folks. If drugs were legal, you know, you could go out and get cocaine, or you could get heroin, or whatever it is you could get. If they were legal and totally regulated and totally clean, free from contaminants, then there would be no need for methamphetamine. I honestly believe that was, what is it, where there's a will, there's a way? Well, drugs were so illegal, and it was so hard to come by, and so expensive, that, you know, methamphetamine was invented. So I think if the legal drugs were available, meth wouldn't even have been invented. So there you go. what is it? Oh, yeah. In Colombia, cocaine producers discard more than 370 tons of chemicals into the environment every year. Yeah, that wouldn't be happening. The levels of street crime caused by the war on drugs are astonishing. We are making criminals. We are criminalizing our entire society. You know, absolutely. UK government estimated 56% of all crimes are committed by drug users. They're responsible for 54% of all robberies, 70 to 80% of all burglaries, and 85% of all shoplifting. There's a report that provides some scary numbers on illegal drugs and the sex trade. Low-income dependent users, mostly women, also often resort to street sex work to buy drugs. The UK Home Office estimated 80 to 95% of street sex work is drug motivated. Studies from Asia, Russia, and the Ukraine show injecting drug users are more likely than other sex workers to engage in street soliciting. Drug using street sex workers are faced with risk of arrest and violence from the clients, pimps, and the police. Now, you know, if prostitution was legal, that's the other desire. Prostitution should, in fact, be legal everywhere and totally regulated and totally clean and all that sort of thing, which would really, really lower the crime rate. Criminalizing drugs use pushes it into the underground where it's unsafe and unsupervised, kind of like what we've been talking about. Instead of placing the priority on safety and education when using drugs, drugs prohibition actually encourages the opposite. Yeah, you know, that's the chief worry for users becoming getting caught. Users seek out more potent and, by extension, more dangerous drugs as a result. Here. Methamphetamine, case in point. In addition, the contaminants which producers cut products with are completely unregulated. See? So they could cut it with whatever, and whatever can be the thing that kills you. Right? Oh, my God. The war on drugs is making it harder for those who need drugs for medical or medicinal purposes to get them. That's true. According to the WHO, World Health Organization, draconian enforcement policies have led to 5.5 billion of the world's population having little or no access to opiate medicines. You know, opiates are good when used properly. I had a doctor tell me one time that if the natural products were legal, there would be far more effective drugs for pain and far less addictive drugs for pain. How about that? 5.5 billion people have little or no access to opiate medications when they need them. 5.5 million of those without access to such treatments have terminal cancer. That's when you need that stuff. Morphine and diamorphine are nearly impossible for patients to get in over 150 countries around the world. Even minor drug-related offenses can destroy one's opportunities forever. And we're talking minor offenses. The report says that in Ukraine, one can be imprisoned for 3 years for possessing 0.005 grams of illegal drugs. Let's take a little break. You're listening to Your Health on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm MC Blair, and we'll be right back. And we are back. This is MC Blair. You're listening to Your Health on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We just talked about minor drug-related. We're talking about the health of the nation and why the war on drugs is essential for getting this nation back on its feet. Excuse me, the stopping the war on drugs is essential to get this nation healthy again. And until that happens, this nation will not be healthy no matter what we do. Even minor drug-related offenses can destroy one's opportunities forever. And we're talking minor offenses. In Russia, one can be put away for a year and a half to a solution traces in a used needle. There are states in the U.S. where a drug conviction means you aren't eligible for many jobs, for food stamps, health benefits, or financial aid, and not just because you've committed a felony. Convicted rapists and robbers, for example, aren't barred access to food stamps, health benefits, or financial aid in the same states. So let me ask you this. A guy or gal has got a half a joint in their pocket, and they get busted, and they are not eligible for a bunch of jobs. They can't get food stamps. They can't get health benefits. They can't get financial aid. Whereas a convicted rapist, convicted for breaking and entering, they can get food stamps, they can get health benefits, they can get financial aid in those same states. How messed up is that? Drug offenses are essentially being used as an excuse to taking away the right to vote. Now that is exactly what Nixon had in mind. Take away the right to vote. And I got to tell you, almost every administration since then has done the exact same thing. Yes, indeed. Let's take away the right to vote. And, of course, Republicans, they want to take away the right to vote to people of color and poor people because most of those people vote Democratic. So there you go, you're gerrymandering. We're going through all that now, and this is a reason for it. Now, I'm not going to say the Koch brothers have anything to do with drugs, but they definitely have a lot to do with gerrymandering and taking over state governments. Hopefully that will be ending soon. Get out and vote. That's a fact. Michael Moore said that if only 2 or 3% of the non-voting public, which is over 100 million people, get out and vote this next year, 2020, that the Democrats will take back the House, we've already taken the House, will take back the Senate and the administration. So there you go. That's what we need to do. Get out and vote, folks. So, drug offenses are taking away your right to vote. U.S. voters are being disenfranchised by the war on drugs. An estimated 5.3 million Americans are denied the right to vote based on felony convictions, 4 million of whom are out of prison. About a third of them are black, including 13% of all African-American youth, or men, I'm sorry. Many of these convictions are drug-related. That's right. I had a friend of mine who was a parole officer, and he said that if the war on drugs ended, that crime, especially robbery and murder, would drop by 60-70%. People around the world, including children, are being imprisoned without due process. We're doing that now. In 2005, China had over 350,000 people locked up in a mandatory drug detoxification center. That's their rehab. Cambodia runs similar facilities, and 25% of those detained are children. Duterte, that's the autocrat in the Philippines, just goes into a town that somebody said, hey, they've got drugs in there, and he kills everything that lives. Men, women, children, dogs, cats, everything. Just wipes out the town. That's how he's handling it. The death penalty is still being used around the world to punish drug offenses. There you go. If you know a drug offender, we're going to kill you. That's Duterte. 32 countries employ the death penalty for drug-related crimes. Many, as a 1,000 are executed worldwide every year. Iran executed nearly 600 people in 2010 for drug-related offenses. Estimates of the number of persons executed in China, between 2,000 all the way to 15,000. We don't know. Thailand killed 2,800 people in 3 months. Yep. half, and then later that half didn't even, later they admitted half of them didn't even create or commit crimes. They just killed them because they were close. Children are losing parents left and right, leaving no one to raise them. Millions of children around the world have a parent incarcerated for drug-related offense. That's why I was talking about losing their dad because he had a, you know, half a joint or a little sack of weed or something, and then goes to jail for 5 to 10 years. At least 50,000 Mexican children have lost a parent. These statistics imply numerous negative spillover effects, including children growing up in prisons and being tortured to get evidence against their parents. Law enforcement is targeting minorities way more than their counterparts. Well, that's Nixon. That's what he wanted. Lock up the hippies and the people of color. Almost identical to those of the rest of the population. Yeah, about that. If you're black in the U.S., you're 10 times more likely to be in prison for a drug offense than if you're white. Law enforcement is targeting low-income groups way more than their counterparts. If you live in the low-income in New York City, low-income neighborhood in New York City, like Brownsville, you're 150 more times likely to be arrested for pot than in a high-income neighborhood like the Upper East Side. Think of it this way. It's easier for police to make an arrest when you have people selling drugs on the street corner than those who are selling or buying illegal drugs in the suburbs or office buildings. The end result is that more blacks are arrested than whites because of the relative ease in making those arrests. It's called low-hanging fruit. Easy to make those arrests. And chances are they don't have access to a good attorney. So let's arrest them and fill up the prisons. The war on drugs is unfairly criminalizing cultural traditions. International drug laws completely ignore the fact that entire indigenous cultures celebrate longstanding traditions related to drug use. These entire cultures, like those in the Andean region of Peru, who chew coca leaves, are essentially deemed criminal by the United Nations. Oh, my goodness gracious. That is so ridiculous. You're listening to Your Health. We're talking about the health of the nation and why the drug war needs to end if we want a society that is conducive to good living. And it's not going to happen until that happens. That's a fact. There's nothing we can do until we end the war on drugs. Period. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The world has better alternatives that don't include death, destruction, and alienation. Other countries, such as Portugal, have shown it is possible to decriminalize drugs. The European Monitoring Center on Drugs and Drug Addiction says of the Portuguese experience, while some want to see Portuguese model as a first step towards legalization of drug use and others considered it as a new flagship of harm reduction, the model, in fact, is best described as being a public health policy founded on values such as humanism, pragmatism, and participation. So in Portugal, they've decriminalized all drugs. And their crime rate is drastically reduced. And that is amazing. Absolutely amazing. Just to recap, remember, the war on drugs is insanely expensive. All the money in practice is a complete and total waste. The wasted money could be spent on programs that actually matter. Mass imprisonment of drug users sacrifice economic productivity by taking them out of the workforce. tax revenue would be a government windfall so we could have tons of goods and services, better roads, better schools, better everything if we eliminated the laws against drugs and started regulating them and taxing them. And right now, becoming a criminal is pretty darn profitable. Makes it look really, really, really good for a kid to say, you know, if I work over here for 8 hours a day, you know, 20 hours a week, because he's still going to school, you know, I'm going to make N dollars. But I can make 25 times that in about 3 hours if I go ahead and get into the drug trade. Expensive drugs cause more people to commit crimes in order to fund their habit. The cost to the public health system of unsafe, unregulated drugs is exorbitant. Just exorbitant. Just remember that, folks. Just remember that. Our health system, we already know that we're overtaxed in the health system. And the health system is just a, what is it, disease management system. It's not really health. And, of course, until not only the war on drugs goes away, but also factory farms go away, until that happens, this country will be sick, 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 sick. And, of course, pharmaceutical industry will love that. And it's just one big vicious circle. The war on drugs distorts entire economies when the drug trade is bigger than anything else. That's for more smaller countries than the United States. Obviously, we have big markets in other commodities other than illegal drugs. But in smaller countries, you get all this money flowing into the country from drug use. And all of a sudden, the currency, the value of the currency just goes way down. And in these other countries, poor farmers are forced by necessity into growing drug crops. And when the government comes along and destroys their field, and by the way, when they spray that Agent Orange on the field, it's never any good after that period, for hundreds of years before you can grow anything that will be healthy. The war on drugs deters business investment in war-torn areas. Remember that. Like the example I gave was Acapulco, the tourist industry. That dropped by 93%. 93% in Acapulco. The violence perpetrated by both criminals and governments to control the illegal drugs is devastating. And there you go. You've got a criminal, and he or she says, you know, I want this to happen or that to happen, and if it doesn't happen, I'm going to go and kill a bunch of people. So guess what? It happens. And they get all this influence on political people, and I liken this to with our current occupant of the White House. Back in 2015, I saw one of his sons having a press conference. And we all know that his credit in the United States was gone because all he does is borrow money and then bankrupt the loan. And the banks didn't want to loan him any more money. And many other banks around the world didn't want to loan him any more money. And they asked his son, they said, well, you know, you don't have any credit. You can't get any more money. What are you doing? What's funding your business? And he said, it doesn't matter. We have tons of money coming in from Russia. Well, we know that the Russian president is also in the head of the Russian mob. And anytime you get involved in mob money, you cannot bankrupt those loans. They don't accept that. So from what I've seen, all evidence points that the current occupant of the White House is so in bed with Russian money that he has to do Russia's bidding completely. The mob. Yeah, he finally got in with the mob. It's an authoritarian wannabe. The war on drugs kills tourism. We talked about that. It's absolutely true. And the excess profits are enough to buy influence and corrupt public officials. We're going through that right now in Congress. It's crazy. The economic distortions caused by illegal drug trade stunt a long-term growth and development, right? The process of profits grow in the unregulated black market for illegal drugs. It attracts more labor and capital investment, drawing it away from legitimate, regulated, and taxable sectors of the economy. You know what I'm saying? You know, you get this hedge fund manager, and he or she's a billionaire, and they control a lot of money, and they have a lot of personal money as well. How many of those do you think funded illegal drug trade? Oh, I don't know. Many, many. Because they're saying, well, you know, if I give this guy, you know, $2 billion, and he starts up a, you know, a drug, illegal drug trade, I'm trying to think of a traffic, what's the word, conduit. For bringing in the drugs, right? So he establishes that, and they start rolling in. The money starts rolling in. This guy gave him $2 billion. All of a sudden, he's racking up, you know, maybe $4 or $5 million a month in profits, or in his, you know, 2% cut or 5% cut. And do you think he wants the drug war eliminated? Heck no, man. And because he owns, you know, two or three congresspeople, that's the way they vote, because he tells them how to vote. And so that is amazing. That's absolutely amazing. On the flip side, the businesses that make up the legitimate economic activity in the same country have to shoulder more of the tax and regulatory burden. So they have to raise tax on legitimate companies because the drug trade has cut into the profits of the country. That's about it for me, and I will be seeing you at another date and time. Welcome back. Welcome to Your Health, and this has been a great day for me, so to speak, bringing you the truth about the health of our nation. It's sick, and until the drug war ends, it will continue to get sicker and sicker and sicker. I hate to say that, but that's the truth.